Tonight on WVW Broadcast Network News, my guest is a former chief of police of a major city right outside of Atlanta, Georgia. He's an expert on Islam. He's training law enforcement officials across America and warning them that America is under siege, that we have been penetrated by a group of people and an ideology that desires to bring down America. And he'll warn us about terrorist training camps throughout America, as well as what is really going on in the mosques of America, who funds them, controls them, and what's the ideology being taught inside those mosques. WVW Broadcast Network News begins right now.
This is WVW Broadcast Network News and Commentary with Brannon Howes.
Welcome to the program. Glad you are with us. My guest tonight, as I said, is a former chief of police. His name is David Morris, and he also works with the United West and our friend over there, Tom Trento. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're quite welcome, Brandon. It's a pleasure.
All right, David, tell us a little bit about yourself. Other than being a chief of police, you are also a deputy, sheriff deputy in the administration of a sheriff deputy department for many years as well, were you not?
That's right. I was a member of the command staff of the Cherokee County Sheriff's Office for 16 years following my retirement from the United States military in 1991. I left the Army with my wife in 1991 and thereafter joined local law enforcement in Georgia, and then was fortunate to be selected as the chief of police for the city of Woodstock, a suburb of Georgia located north of Atlanta.
So when did you become interested in Islam?
Well, the first warning shot, if you will, certainly for all of us, was the 9/11 attack, but we were told, if you recall, immediately after that, that Islam was a religion of peace, that the hijackers, the attackers of that terrible event had nothing to do with Islam. So like so many others, I hit the snooze button and wasn't too concerned, even though there were plenty of attacks going on all around the world. Thank God that didn't have to worry too much, because George W. Bush, if you remember, assured us that Islam was peaceful. My wake-up call goes back to the Fort Hood attack. If you remember, right after that attack, it was labeled a workplace violence attack, if you will, or event. Had nothing to do with Islam. So I didn't think that that was accurate, so I started studying on my own, read some books, and found out that the threat is much worse than I ever thought or imagined.
Well, let's talk about these mosques. How many of these mosques are in the U.S.? Who's funding them, and what's the ideology being taught in them?
Well, there's about 3,000 mosques now or more in the United States. They're growing by leaps and bounds. The goal of the Muslim Brotherhood is to have a mosque in every major city throughout our country. The funding comes from Wahhabi religious sect in Saudi Arabia. And their ideology is rooted in Salafism, which means the return of Islam to its original roots as propagated by Muhammad between the years 610 and 632 when he finally died.
And so what kind of ideology have you found? What literature have you found in mosques, and what are they teaching the folks in those mosques?
Well, the literature was written by Islamic scholars who were propagating the same form of Islam that Muhammad was. Sayyid Qutb is one of the major ones. He is the godfather of the jihadist movement, the contemporary jihadist movement, who was originally an Egyptian school teacher, but became radicalized into the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt during the late 1940s, early 1950s. He was imprisoned in Egypt and eventually died in prison, but not before he wrote the Jihadist Manifesto in Milestones. Milestones is a book written by, as I said, Sayyid Qutb, that lays out the step-by-step takeover and the adoption of Salafism, and how Islam must dominate, must take over the world to impose Sharia law over mankind.
And of course, Sayyid Qutb is one of the guys that was promoting Muslim Brotherhood's concept of interfaith dialogue here in America and said that it is a one-way bridge to bring the non-Muslim to their side, not the other way around. And so we see interfaith dialogue not only being done by churches and religious useful idiots like James White with Yasser Qadhi right here in town, but police departments and sheriff departments are doing interfaith dialogue, correct?
That's right. Absolutely.
Why on earth would a police department or sheriff department do interfaith dialogue?
Well, they do it because they're afraid of the pushback if they have any training that talks about this threat. So they bow to it, they cater to it, and they submit to it. And they don't allow the training to come into their departments because they're absolutely petrified of the pushback that will happen, as happened to John Guandolo and myself and others who have tried to be forthright and train law enforcement officers of what is going to happen or what is happening in our communities.
Well, what happened, you're former chief of police in Woodstock, Georgia. You then move into this line of work, training law enforcement as a former law enforcement official for many years at the sheriff's department administrative level, then a chief of police of a police department. And you tried doing this in your own state. What happened to you?
Well, in March of 2018, I was scheduled to teach an eight-hour class for the Barrow County, Georgia Sheriff's Office. And as soon as CARE, the Council of American Islamic Relations, got wind of that, they immediately went on an offensive, labeling me as an Islamophobe and not qualified to teach the class, trying to pressure the sheriff into not hosting the class. Fortunately, the sheriff stood firm and allowed the training to go forward. After considerable public pressure for him to submit to the Muslim Brotherhood and not do so. But he did. He showed a great deal of courage and allowed the training. We had 58 students in the class. The vast majority were law enforcement. There were some civilians in the class. And the Muslim Brotherhood lost that particular round because the sheriff was able to stand firm.
Yet there was a push even from the governor's office against you, right?
The governor's office also got wind of it and was afraid of the political pushback and didn't want to grant training credit to the police officers who took the training. Fortunately, the powers that be were able to get the credit for the officers, and it took several months after the class before the training was actually approved for their credit counting towards their annual training requirements.
And so you're having a harder time, like John Guandolo and others, you're having a harder time getting into these police departments and sheriff departments to train them, correct?
Well, I think that the police departments, again, are reluctant to host this type of training because they know if it goes public, there will be a great deal of pushback. And most police chiefs work for political officials, and they, too, do not want their city or town raked over the coals with adverse publicity. So it's quite easy to take the path of least resistance and not take the training at all.
And so to get around this, one of the things we've done is brought him into our TV studio. He's recorded 4 one-hour shows from our news desk, just giving the briefing with a PowerPoint that we're putting online for you then to share with your law enforcement officials, local community members, and hopes that we can go around them, correct?
That's correct.
We also will let you know tonight, if you grab a pen and paper, you can go to a website and you can bring David to your community. If your local law enforcement community does not have the courage to train your local law enforcement against this real, clear, and present threat to America and to your community, then maybe you could do it. Maybe you could organize some police officers, sheriff deputies, city council members, other business people in town, invite them into your home, invite them into your living room. Maybe if you're a pastor of a church and you have the courage, maybe do this in your fellowship hall of your church. But certainly, we're increasingly finding even the churches are folding. And so it's up to us, the citizens. Bring David into your home, into your living room, invite the key officials, as I said, from police officers to sheriff deputies, to city council members, businessmen, maybe some religious leaders that would have the courage to show up, and let him conduct his training on a Friday evening or Saturday evening, or maybe all day Saturday, whatever you work out with him, and he'll do that right in your living room. And the website is theunitedwest.org/Sharia Crime Stoppers. theunitedwest.org/Sharia Crime Stoppers.
And one more point do you have to understand is I do not charge for the training. I do need some help with expenses, though, but I don't charge for the training. So hopefully that will help satisfy anybody that would like to host this type of training.
So when you say expenses, we mean some travel and
then lodging.
That's so right. Very minimal cost.
That's right.
All right. I know there are some of you out there. You know, you're blessed. You have a good job. You have a successful business. And certainly if a group of you got together, you could certainly cover his travel and lodging and do this in your home. Some of you have a great room, a good-sized living room, good-sized basements in certain parts of the country where you could easily host this. So again, we've had to go around the churches largely over the years because they didn't have the courage to host us starting in about 2008. Those that had the courage to host us generally couldn't hold the crowd. Like, we consistently had 1,500 to 1,800 in Minneapolis. A lot of the big churches would not host us because they got big by catering to all the latest fad and political correctness. The smaller churches that would host us, well, they only would seat 200-300, so they can't host an event that's going to have 1,500 to 1,800 people. But increasingly, we have found, again, we've had to go around the churches because of the nature of this topic. Well, now we're having to sadly go around many of our police departments and sheriff departments. So it's up to the citizens once again. So I hope you'll take this seriously and go to theunitedwest.org/Sharia Crime Stoppers. Let's talk about what's taught in some of these mosques. You've seen the literature. What are they saying about America, Americans, and what are they asking for these Muslims in these mosques to be trained in and believe?
Well, they're very anti-Semitic. They're anti-Jew and they're anti-Christian. It's a religion of dominance. So this is being perpetrated, as well as jihad. Jihad, you have to remember, is a form of religious expression. So when they talk about jihad, they're not referring to terrorism at all. It is a form of religious expression, obedience to their God, Allah. So they're promoting this concept. And this is why mosques are considered incubators for radicalization, because young second and third generation Muslim men, mostly, some women, and recent converts to Islam are buying into this perverted ideology of violence as a form of religious expression. To do what? To establish Sharia law over mankind, to establish Sharia law on behalf of Allah, and that's when there will be finally peace in the world. It's another utopian attempt to bring paradise, peace to the United States and the world.
And there are different kinds of jihad. So some of this is civilizational jihad, where they run for office. And now in 2018, we see all up and down from the local, state, federal level, hundreds of Islamists elected to office. So there's this civilizational jihad, but then there's the violent jihad. There's also financial jihad, where they fund it with their zakat, and or where businesses, Saudi Arabia came over here with a bunch of money, invested in American businesses, but the American businesses have to give a percentage of their profits to the Islamic Sharia finance organizations that they tell them to, and then those organizations, those Sharia financial organizations, give it to the really jihadi groups that are funding real jihad or violent jihad all over the world. So what we're seeing is a civilizational jihad and a violent jihad. While some of them are going from these mosques and performing violent jihad in the name of ISIS, like in the terrorist attack of October 31st, 2017 in Manhattan with a truck attack and knife attack, we see not so much of that yet. We see more of the civilizational jihad, correct?
We certainly see that. And to get back to that particular attack that Brandon just talked about, there was a very fundamentalist mosque connected to that perpetrator that was preaching anti-Semitism, death to homosexuals, and it was well known to the mayor of New York City. He was warned by another imam that there was radicalization in this particular mosque. It was ignored, even though the police department, even several years prior, had this mosque under surveillance because it too was concerned. But Mayor de Blasio canceled that surveillance, did not heed the warnings, and we had the attack.
Now, you talk about an imam warning the police about another mosque. It's too radical. Now we get into what we commonly know as the Hegelian dialectic process, pitting opposites against each other, creating conflict, managing the crisis, and not letting a good crisis go to waste, and then using the crisis to further their agenda. I have to wonder if one reason we haven't seen a lot more violent jihadi attacks in America is because they're being told by their handlers to stand down for right now. We're making progress in the civilizational jihad by getting our people elected to office at the state, local, and federal level, and we will take over with a revolution from within. Kind of like Herbert Marcuse of the Frankfurt School, who said, the old way of revolution with guns and bullets is old-fashioned. The new way is a diffused and dispersed disintegration of the system. We'll have what Italian communist Antonio Gramsci called the long march through the institutions. We'll take over the power centers of education and media and government and religion. And I think many of the Islamists are being controlled and funded and trained by the Marxists, that red-green axis, including, I think, a lot of training coming out of Russia and the Kremlin, as Jeff Nyquist and others have written about, and former KGB agents have testified to in their own books and interviews with people like Jeff Nyquist and others. So I think they're learning. The Islamists have learned a lot from the Marxists in this red-green axis. So they don't want a lot of terrorist attacks in America right now, because that would have maybe slow things down in Europe and other places. And once they get an upper hand here in America and have the upper house, then they can start doing more of these things. So the occasional terrorist attack, however, can be used to their advantage. The imam says to the folks in New York, you got a radical mosque over there, you better look out for that. They don't really listen. A guy pledges allegiance to ISIS, carries out the attack in Manhattan with the truck in October of 31st, 2017. Now this imam can say, I told you so, I tried to warn you. Now what that does is causes the officials to look to them, Muslim Brotherhood mosques, funded many of them and established by Saudi Arabia, of which was also behind 9/11, according to many experts. Now they are seen as the people to be trusted, to give them more positions, more counsel comes from them, listen to them, help them, defend them, because they're the good guys. These are ISIS guys, are the radicals, these are the good Muslims. But it's really Muslim Brotherhood that goes all the way back to Hamas, the terrorist organization. It goes all the way back to their founder, al-Husseini, which goes all the way back to the Grand Mufti of Palestine, al-Husseini, who worked with Adolf Hitler to carry out the slaughter of 6 million Jews, 5 million non-Jews. But now they're seen as the good guys who are warning about the bad guys. So don't worry about Muslim Brotherhood. We'll help you. And that's now letting the fox in the hen house. So in other words, Muslim Brotherhood capitalizes on the terrorist attacks in order to gain more favor, correct?
And they also capitalize on one other thing. Remember the red-green axis, the progressives and the Marxists are very active right now at constantly committing chaos throughout our political and social environment. And this distracts us from what the Muslim Brotherhood is doing behind the scenes. So all of this distraction is helping further the Muslim Brotherhood cause. So while we are distracted on the one hand, it's another sleight of hand. While we're distracted over here, they're active over here, subverting our Constitution. They're keeping their eye on the ball. They're going to try to subvert us without firing a shot. They've written about it. They've explained it. Just look at the Quranic concept of war that was published by a Pakistani general, endorsed by the Pakistan chief of staff several years ago, that lays out the importance of preparation for battle. And if you do your preparation properly, you may never have to fire a shot. And that's what they're up to.
And one of the things they're doing, as we see, is working with Republicans and Democrats on hate crime legislation, laws that keep us from speaking truth about Islam. Laws, again, going back a few years that we've written about, we've warned about, that Usama Dakdak and Sharam Hadian have been warning about, that the Republicans and Democrats are working on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., with Muslim Brotherhood, to deal with people like you and me and others that are speaking truth about Islam, that we would be labeled as being involved in hate speech, offending the prophet, and therefore could be penalized and certainly kicked off terrestrial radio. and regular television, but even bringing crimes against us, penalizing us, and using that as justification then to completely scrub us from the World Wide Web. Muslim Brotherhood is behind these kind of pieces of legislation, correct?
That's correct. And recently an imam published a list of words on his website that he considers Islamophobic. Jihad, jihadist, and others are words that he does not want to remove from the public dialogue because they're going to be considered as Islamophobic or hate speech, just like Brandon indicated. Once this happens, we're going to shut down all speech, all warnings about this threat.
What about our Second Amendment rights? How are the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamists, the Green of the Red-Green Axis working with the Marxist and members of Congress to destroy at the state and federal level our right to keep and bear arms per the Second Amendment?
Well, just look at the people that are most vocal about limiting your Second Amendment rights. It's the Marxists, it's the progressives, it's the wing of the Democratic Party that has been totally taken over by this far leftist movement to take away your Second Amendment rights. They're constantly trying to whittle away and chip away at our rights to bear arms and protect ourselves. It's going to be the law-abiding citizens that will comply with any laws concerning the Second Amendment. And once that they become limited, we will become disarmed, and then the eventual takeover will take place.
And the Islamists have joined in on sponsoring or promoting and pushing this kind of legislation, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the Islamists are behind some of the sanctuary city movements. In California, for example, the Muslim Public Affairs Council was the one that joined forces to get sanctuary cities and the sanctuary state established in California. So they're behind all of these movements. How about on the border? No wall, open borders is all being propagated by this alliance of the far left, the Marxists, as well as the Muslim Brotherhood.
So deprive us of our religious freedom, our freedom of speech, our religious freedom, our Second Amendment rights, open border, no sovereignty, no national security, sanctuary cities so you can allow an invading army to literally come in and take up residence legally inside of major American cities. And then once you have deprived the truth tellers, those lifting up a shout of warning from speaking, or the American citizens from owning guns or limiting their access to guns or just outright taking them, this invading army of the Red-Green Axis has us with a boot on our throat. We're done.
And just remember, we have people in the Republican Party as well that are not looking after our interests. Paul Ryan himself did not support any kind of border wall, even though funding was originally passed and given for the border wall. He drug his feet on it, didn't get it put in place. He totally sabotaged our current president. So there are others as well. The former National Security Advisor, General McMaster, he purged the National Security Council of those people who were trying to warn our president about this alliance. In particular, Rich Higgins was fired because of a memo he wrote trying to warn our president about this red-green Marxist axis. And he was fired by our general officer, McMaster, because he didn't want him anymore in the National Security Council.
And McMaster being, his title there was what? Is the National Security Advisor,
That's
right?
Correct.
He was head of that. And he didn't like what Rich Higgins put out. Fabulous 6-7-page report.
That's correct.
Fabulous. Warning about the Frankfurt School, cultural Marxism, Herbert Marcuse, a lot of things I wrote about in Grave Influence in 2008, 2009. He was warning about in that paper to President Trump. McMaster didn't like it. But McMaster is also, as the head of the National Security Council before John Bolton, McMaster didn't see Islam as a threat, did he?
No. He did not. He, as many military leaders don't want it labeled and are very comfortable accepting countering violent extremism as the way that this type of threat training is given now in the United States military. It's been watered down, it's politically correct, and it's subservient to the Muslim Brotherhood, because they're the ones that created the countering violent extremism narrative. It came from the Muslim Brotherhood.
How has it gone historically in Germany when they took away all the weapons of the Jews. How did that end? I think we all know it's a rhetorical question, but when the Muslims came in there and worked with Albana and Hitler, I mean, the Jews had no way to fight back, did they?
Absolutely. We saw what happened once the population was armed and defenseless. It was just a matter of time before they were taken over, and it happened very quickly.
And in so many ways, we're seeing history repeat itself. The National Socialist Workers' Party, the Nazi Party, socialist, working with the Islamists, that red-green axis there in Nazi Germany, depriving people of their Second Amendment, religious discrimination, then, of course, depriving people of their civil liberties, Jews and Christians, and then anti-Semitism. All of it seems to be repeating itself, does it not?
Oh, absolutely. That's what history does. If you remember back prior to World War II, who was the biggest warner, if you will? Who was waving the caution flags, the red flags that we had to be on guard? It was Winston Churchill. And you saw how he was rebuffed, constantly, constantly, constantly rebuffed. His warnings were not heeded, and yet all of his warnings came to pass.
Yeah, then they turned to him to have them...
To bail him out.
Yeah, bail him out.
And then they threw him out.
Exactly right. All right, my guest is David Boris, and again, his website, theunitedwest.org/Sharia Crime Stoppers, and it's been flashing up on the screen throughout the program. How many terrorist trainings? So we're under siege. Let me just ask you this question. We're producing this docu-movie, Siege, following up our docu-movie, Sabotage. Of course, you can watch Sabotage the first hour for free at sabotagethemovie.com, sabotagethemovie.com. By the way, you've seen it?
Mm-hmm. I have.
You care
Excellent.
To, is it?
Oh, yes. Fast-paced, very informative, six sections, and the last one will really open your eyes of how our religious establishment has totally been penetrated and compromised by this threat. I recommend it highly as a way to very quickly understand the entire scope of what this threat is.
Well, thank you for that. And by the way, the last hour on Marxianity exposes several well-known Bible teachers and religious leaders that might shock many of you, but also exposes some guys, some quote pastors, that are working to take away our Second Amendment rights. So these are pastors that have actively organized an organization and using twisted scripture to deprive us of our Second Amendment rights. So you have these useful idiot pastors doing the bidding of the Marxists and the Muslims and sabotaging our own country.
So it's a done deal.
Yeah. So we're filming now, obviously, many interviews, and you're part of it, for the next docu-movie, Siege, the clear and present dangers facing America and the persecution that is coming via a red-green axis to Christians, conservatives, and Jews and a false church. Are we under siege? Is there a clear and present danger? And what are some of those clear and present dangers as far as your expertise?
Well, I think that this siege actually started years and years and years ago. Remember, the Muslim Brotherhood initially came here in 1962, 1963 at the University of Illinois at Urbana, where it formed the Muslim Student Association. Since then, they've installed a series of front groups throughout the United States, a network of Muslim Brotherhood followers, supporters, friends, if you will, plus the alliance of the Red Axis, the Marxists, the Social Marxists, the Democrats, the Liberals, have formed an axis to subvert our Constitution. And they've been totally open about what they intend to do. All you have to do is read their explanatory memorandum that the FBI discovered in an archive of all of their documents. So we've known about the threat for years, and yet we still are turning our back on it. So the siege is underway. And the siege has been furthered by useful idiots, by members of both administrations, by senior officials in the military and political officials, and ranking members of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and other organizations who have allowed this purge of training materials to take place. Under their watch, they've allowed it. Remember, all of these officials took an oath of office, the same oath that I took and other members took to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. This is a domestic threat, but it's part of the global threat of Islam to conquer.
And as we see this threat, a lot of guys my age, younger guys, younger than you, look to you, look to your experience. You were in the military for 23 years. You were in the command staff of a sheriff's department for, what, 16 years?
That's correct.
And then you were a chief of police in Woodstock, Georgia for 3 years. So I look to guys like you and I say, praise the Lord for guys like you that are now lifting up a shout. The older guys, the guys who have wisdom, who have trained, who have learned, who know law and law enforcement, who have credibility with law and law enforcement, and who have educated themselves by taking the time to study and get up on the red-green axis. And so we say, thank you, David. But we also say, aren't we thankful for all the former chief of police, retired chief of police, that are joining him and lifting up a shout and coming forward and having his back and joining him? Oh, wait a minute. That's not happening, is it?
No.
And yesterday we talked with our friend, your friend, David Voldovan, retired FBI. Again, we're looking to that generation, the older generation of retired agents with the gray hair and the experience who were trained at a different day and a different time and we would think would have a little more courage than the feminized young people of today. And yet the older gray-haired retired guys that many of us younger guys are counting on to lift up a shout and have our back as older guys saying, hey, we've been there, we've done that. Listen to these guys, whether it's the younger guys or whether it's the older gentlemen who have the experience. These older gentlemen from the FBI, these older gentlemen from being former chiefs of police, they should be helping us.
And they're not.
And they're not. And yet I think that's shocking to many people because we, a lot of us younger guys, and I'm increasingly becoming less younger, but younger relative to the guys that are in their 70s, you know, late 70s, early 80s, that are still very, very articulate and in great health and could be out here helping, we look to them and say, wait a minute, you're of our father's generation. We're counting on you to lift up a shout and help us and have our back. And we thought that that generation certainly would have been trained to do that and had the intestinal fortitude to do that because they had a more conservative, traditional upbringing, but they're not doing it.
Let me give you a personal example of what you were talking about. I have a former Army officer who I was fortunate enough to serve with in Germany, now retired, and when I presented him with the information about General Dempsey, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who was instrumental in purging out the training of the military. General Dempsey happened to have been a classmate in West Point of this officer who I served with. And when I told this officer about what General Dempsey did, he immediately turned his back. Our friendship has been severed. He did not want to believe it, and he's ignored it. So often this is the case. People do not want to accept this. They're into denial over this threat. It's a denial that is a natural consequence when faced with a overwhelming problem, threat, if you will. Our first and natural inclination is to say, no, it's not really that bad. It will go away with time. Well, this one is that bad, and it won't go away with time. It will only get worse.
So what you're saying is, whether it's military, whether it's the intelligence community, the FBI, the CIA, whether it's religious leaders, pastors and religious leaders, many of them are compromising, taking a strong stand because they don't want to lose friendships. They don't want to be an island. Recently, a well-known international Bible teacher sat on his church platform at what was called a shepherd's conference for pastors and looked at three of the biggest cultural Marxists in America that I expose in this book that came out in November 2018, this came out, and this well-known Bible teacher in March of 2019 looked at the three men that I expose in this book, who are major cultural Marxists, Mark Dever, Lincoln Duncan, and Al Mohler, and told them in front of all of these thousands of pastors, not to count the thousands watching online, and told them, I know you're into social justice, but I'm not going to fight you. You're my friends. I'm not going to fight my friends. You've been given a special place in the kingdom of God. I don't want to be an island. So we just had a major evangelical leader cave and say, my friendships and my comfort are more important than truth. And what you're telling me is this is not only going on in the area with our Bible teachers and evangelical leaders, but military officials and law enforcement. And unlike the pastors, the military and law enforcement guys have sworn an oath to defend and protect the Constitution and our United States of America from enemies, both foreign and domestic. They're violating their oath. They are in some cases, some of them are taking part in a treasonous, subversive activity. Are they not? They're being derelict in their duty.
I dare say that's an accurate statement. If for no other reason, they allowed the purge to take place. All of the training has been sanitized because the Muslim Brotherhood demanded it, and we caved to it. That's aiding and abetting our enemy. When the head of the Justice Department, when John Brennan, when he was a national security advisor to Barack Obama, and General Dempsey all weak-kneed and went along with the directive to purge it out because the Muslim Brotherhood demanded that it be done. That is treasonous in my estimation. That is turning your back against the oath of office. Just think what would have happened if one general officer who was already eligible to retirement, he was a four-star general, had said, no, I'm not going to do that. One general officer stood firm. And if he was fired, then went public about it. But no, he did not do that. He folded, he caved, he went along with it. And it absolutely makes me infuriated that he could not do that, could not stand up to the pressure, but it went along with it, even though he would not lose one dime of retirement pay if he did.
Mm. I remember interviewing a guy a few years ago, General Cash, and he was a brigadier general. He was assistant director of operations for NORAD. I interviewed him on radio, fascinating interview. He said he finally had to retire. He could not get up every morning and look himself in the mirror, put on the uniform, and play this political game that was required to continue. He did that at great sacrifice, because as he described on the radio, achieving that first star is the hardest one. The rest of them come pretty easy if you just keep your nose clean and do what you're told, right?
Don't forget, there have been many general officers who have stood up, and they were purged out as well by the Obama administration. So I don't want to give you the impression that they weren't honorable general officers who were trying to uphold their oath of office. One comes to mind, General Nagata, went before Congress and said, it's the ideology that drives this threat that we need to be aware of, and we're not.
And so Obama purges the Pentagon from a lot of the guys that would have helped us,
That's right. Now
they're gone. And then you have the others who see that, and they go along to get along and to advance their career instead of being generals in the Pentagon executing the war as they should to win. They become politically correct. They bring in the Muslim Brotherhood chaplains. They bring in the Muslim Brotherhood to consult them. We give eyes and ears onto our special ops as we did in Afghanistan, as Billy and Karen Vaughn have told us, went on with their son, Aaron Vaughn, the SEAL Team 6 team that died, 17 of those, 30 Americans altogether in that Chinook helicopter. We let the fox into the hen house. So the good generals are gone. They've been purged. The guys that are there, clearly, many of them have not seen combat, and they are there because they have learned a lesson from seeing who was purged to go along to get along, correct?
Just look at General McMaster. I can think of no better example of the type of generalship that we have right now in the military.
So we are under siege.
No question about it.
And that's why what we're doing is so important. Because, I don't want to sound, you know, self-serving here, but there are not a lot of networks and radio networks and TV stations that will produce programs like this and put it out, are there?
Just look what happened recently to Judge Jeanine. She had the fortitude to at least question what's going on with Islam and Sharia law by questioning the loyalty of a recently elected Muslim representative to the elected official to the House of Representatives.
From Minnesota, by the way.
And as soon as she did, what did Fox News do? Suspended Judge Jeanine for 2 weeks. I can't wait to get her back. She has a lot of support out there in the national audience, and I hope she will come back. But again, the message is sent. Islam is protected. Watch what you say, because if you say too much, you're going to be punished.
And what she said about the hijab and Omar, the congresswoman from Minnesota, wearing it, was all accurate. 100% accurate.
Absolutely.
And yet it's Islamophobic to say what she did, to speak
That's
the
right.
truth. She has an unreasonable fear or phobia. There's something not quite right with her in the head, right? That's what they say. And that's what they say about you and I. And so when all these people are purged or they put off TV and suspended for a while, if not permanently done, suspended or put off, then what happens is the message is sent and there's a chilling of freedom of speech, freedom of religion. And therefore, we as Americans are now destroying our own house by our own hand, just as the Muslim Brotherhood explanatory memorandum said they would get us to do in their document in 91, discovered in 2004. And again, folks, this is largely why in June of 2006, I sat down in my office and laid out on paper building a digital technology platform, broadcast network like this for radio and TV, because I knew that the day was coming where we had to be able to have the freedom to say what we wanted, build a network, build a following, build a massive email list, build a large text alert system, and get out the truth. Because I saw this was coming, and I saw the technology was coming, and we were ahead of the curve. When I sat down in my office and planned out this network division in June of 2006, you could barely stream a video for many people. They'd get a spinning circle. A lot of people still were not on digital high speed, but we knew it was coming. We were one of the first companies to have a Roku channel. Many people didn't even know what Roku was. And now with our distribution through Roku and apps and computer and website, we're reaching millions, millions. Someone called the other day and said, we did some studies on your website. You're crushing many of the conservative websites out there with your bandwidth. You're doing far better than they are as far as your traffic. This is why we built this, folks, with your help. Because we knew we needed an alternative to be able to put, as we did yesterday in this studio, former FBI agent Dave Baldwin on, as well as today, Dave Boreas. This is so important. And then having Usama Dakdok, Sharam Haidee, and Phil Haney, the Vaughns, and the list goes on of people that have TV shows with this network. Because at the end of the day, we can talk about everything that's happening, about us being under siege. But the reality is, we have to go around the churches, largely, the pastors, the military officials, the intelligence community, we, the American people now, and the mainstream fake media, we have been forced to go around all of these institutions that have been sieged and be, in many ways, an independent voice speaking truth to the American people. Because when the American people get the truth, we see that many of them are responding. The good news is, this is all about education, because this is largely an information operation, a brainwashing operation, propaganda. And the way you refute that is with the truth, correct?
That's correct. Let me ask your viewers to do one thing. Think back to your own pastors, your own church officials, your own rabbi, for example. When is the last time that any of your pastors have warned you about this threat? Pastors and rabbis are supposed to be shepherds, protectors of their flocks. And when's the last time your pastor ever warned you about the genocide that's taking place right now of Christians that are being killed and persecuted throughout the Middle East and Northern Africa? At least asking you to pray for them. When I go out and speak to civic groups, whether it be Act for America groups or former Tea Party groups or Republican groups, the overwhelming people in the audience remained silent when I asked to see a show of hands of when their pastor ever spoke out and asked them to pray for people being suffering under the extermination that they're going through. All of these topics ought to be front page, front and center, warning shots, letting people know that this threat exists. And pastors are totally, totally silent and oblivious to it. They will not discuss it. They're afraid of it.
We see over in France, where a few years ago, they closed down between 100 and 160 mosques because of terrorist attacks. They went in there and they started finding military-grade weapons, and they were shutting down 100 to 160 mosques. People can go online and look at it. Why are they finding military-grade weapons in those mosques over there in France? And is that occurring here, and why?
The Muslim Brotherhood's objectives have mosques in all of our major cities. And the mosques, according to the explanatory memorandum, must be of the same type, the same purpose as the initial mosque that Muhammad established, not in Mecca, but in Medina. It was a military headquarters. It was a logistic headquarters where weapons could be stored, where they could make ready for jihad and conquest, where they could hold prisoners of war, where they could plan for future operations. That was the purpose of the mosque. The Muslim Brotherhood went on to say that the other purpose of mosque is a niche for our prayers, almost as a second thought. that mosques serve a religious purpose, but their primary purpose, according to their own documents, is to be an armory, a local armory from which military operations will eventually be performed if they're needed.
What about terrorist training camps? How many of them are in the U.S.?
There are 23 or more. They're located throughout rural America primarily. You can go to the Clarion Intelligence Network for more information about these Muslim of America jihadi camps run by the Jamaat el-Fukra leader in Pakistan. They have a network of camps throughout the United States, a network of followers, primarily former military or former convicts who have become radicalized in our prison system. And there are also training camps for guerrilla warfare for actual combat. They're armed, they're trained, and they're prepared.
And so while they may not want them to act now as they go for more of a civilizational jihad, they are getting ready so that if they cannot do it through the soft jihad, they'll do it through the process of war.
And that's what I think is that they're preparing for, that an eventuality that they may have to use combat. Right now, they're very complacent in terms of allowing the Muslim Brotherhood to do its thing covertly without violence. And they're in lockstep with the Marxists, the cultural Marxists, and the progressive movement to do that. And that's what you see is that form of the Axis taking place. But while that's going on, these jihadists are infiltrating our country across the border. These terrorist cells are entering our country. We have ISIS training camps just across the southern border in northern Mexico. It's been well documented by the Department of Homeland Security, but it gets no coverage by the local media. And unfortunately, I cannot imagine why President Trump also isn't warning us about it, because his own administration has certainly this information at their disposal. But we're not being warned about what's coming across the southern border. And don't forget Canada as well. Prime Minister Trudeau is now accepting former ISIS members into Canada. And do you think that they're going to be constrained by a northern border that doesn't exist? They're going to come across that border as well.
What about ISIS training camps in Mexico? Any information on that?
Yes, they exist right across the border in Ciudad Juarez is where one of them existed, and others have been uncovered. Remember, Iran, through Hezbollah, has penetrated deep into South America. It's firmly entrenched down there, and these jihadi fighters are migrating up, have become infiltrated in these caravans, and they're coming across the southern border. It's been well documented. Judicial Watch has run articles and warnings about it, but again, this not being heeded.
What about the Islamic Revolutionary Guard from Iran? We're hearing from Peter Pry and others that there are potentially thousands of Islamic Revolutionary Guard, which just is... ISIS is a drop in the bucket compared to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard. And we heard they have potentially thousands of agents sitting here in the U.S. already. What say you?
I haven't heard about the agents of the Revolutionary Guards in the United States, but it wouldn't surprise me. What I have heard is their forces are training in South America, this portion is of the Revolutionary Guard. So they're obviously getting ready for something, and now the recent report is that even Russia is sending troops into South America.
Venezuela.
Into Venezuela. So the momentum is starting to occur. The winds of war, if you will, in conflict are blowing, and we need to pay attention to it.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about Sharia. We're enforcing Sharia on ourselves, just as they said they would get us to do. But now we're seeing in Germany a patrol car that looks like it is from Turkey. We've showed pictures through Claire Lopez. Well, it looks like a police car, but it's a Turkish police car enforcing Sharia in Germany. And that was a shock to a lot of people. But now we're finding patrol cars of Muslims in New York, and they're being fully embraced by New York. They want it to go all over the city and to be a national model. Now, they say they're going to do that to make sure that Muslims are being kept safe and there's no harassment or hate crimes against them. But my guess is what they're really going to be doing is enforcing Sharia, not only on the Muslim, but the non-Muslim, meaning they're going to come after anyone who's doing a hate crime, speaking truth about Islam, passing out literature, anything else. And then they're going to make sure that the Muslims are staying in line by making sure they're wearing their hijab. So any of the moderate Muslims that they would consider being hypocrites because they're not practicing accordingly, those moderate Muslims who could be killed if they don't get in line, just as could the infidels, these patrol cars really not only are going, I think, to intimidate Americans, but they're going to intimidate the moderate Muslim. You better get on the side of Sharia, correct?
That's right. We have Muslim or Sharia community patrols currently in New York City. There's not any difference between the way their vehicles are painted, colored, and with their logos than the New York City Police patrol vehicles themselves. They're almost identical, except they say Sharia Community Patrol on it. Unfortunately, in New York City, there are also Jewish community patrols as well. And so the Muslims have picked up on that. The jihadists have picked up on that. The fundamentalists, if you can do it, we can do it. So that's part of the problem. But these community patrols, and we've had representatives from Georgia in Minneapolis, St. Paul, donning a uniform, self-proclaimed Sharia patrols as well. So it's not an isolated event when they start patrolling city streets to impose their law here.
When we have Muslim Brotherhood working actively as they did with the socialist, the National Socialist Workers Party of Adolf Hitler, the Nazis, the Muslim Brotherhood recruiting some 30,000 Muslims, some Bosnian Muslims to wear the Nazi uniform, the crescent moon and sword, or certainly the sword of Islam with the swastika, as we document in the movie Sabotage. You can watch that first hour for free at sabotagethemovie.com. Then we clearly know that those Muslims were Islamo-Nazis working with Adolf Hitler, giving the Nazi salute. Many of them today are also adhering to social justice, a major tenet of Islam. They are praising Adolf Hitler. Some of them say they want to finish what Adolf Hitler started with, wiping out the Jews, killing the Jews, killing the Christians. I refer to it often as Islamo-Nazis. What do you think of that term?
Well, I think it's a very accurate term, certainly, because they see the same, you see the same model playing out. We've been here before. All we have to do is open ours and recognize it. But this battle is not going to be won at the federal level. I am absolutely convinced right now that the federal level is totally impotent and has been totally penetrated to such a grave extent that we're not going to win it there. It's going to be won at the local level, recognizing this threat and making sure that local people counter it. By following some of the suggestions that Brandon gave you earlier, that more and more people need to be educated in the true nature of what we're facing. It's being played out right in front of our eyes, and we can't deny it any longer.
So we need to win it at the local and state level. And some states are doing better than others. We reside, David and I reside in Tennessee. You're in Georgia. But Tennessee is doing better than some other states, correct?
Oh, I think so. But all states are, a lot of states are starting to come around, or many of them are. Some of them are not, such as Michigan and Minnesota, and New Jersey as well. In Tennessee, there's a full court press on the Bible Belt to take over. So you've got to be alert for what is happening. When mosques are being constructed where they're constructed where there is no Muslim population, that should be a red flag that you can expect more to come. They are positioning these mosques at key strategic places for a reason, and you just need to think it through.
Well, they want to dominate in the places like the Bible Belt, where people tend to sign up for the military in greater numbers than the rest of the country. Patriotic, Second Amendment folks in the South, in the Bible Belt, if they can penetrate that, intimidate local law enforcement, intimidate local elected officials, and then intimidate state officials and get Sharia laws and diminish our freedom to warn about them, they can then take over what really is probably really the last greatest hope for the nation, which is the South.
That's right. David brought very clear yesterday when he appeared here and he talked about the review of textbooks, of how our education system has been totally compromised by misinformation, by a revisionist aspect to our history. Just think about how this generation of children view America now because of the propaganda that has been propagated in our textbooks. And unless it's purged out, unless an accurate view of history is reinstated, our children don't stand a chance because they've been totally brainwashed at the behest of social Marxists.
Absolutely. And yesterday on our radio show, we had a lady call in from Mexico talking about how she is an American, educated in America, and she said, I bought the lies of the left. I bought into the brainwashing. I hated America. I hated America so much, I left America and moved to Mexico because I could not live in such a horrible, racist, hateful nation like America. Then some missionaries from Mississippi came into her life in Mexico. She became a believer. She began to be re-educated as to what is the truth, and the truth destroyed the lies. She now is married to a Mexican. She has children. She says now today, as she did on radio, she is a proud American living in Mexico, but a proud American. And she called in from Mexico to say, everything you're saying about brainwashing and textbooks, I was a victim of it, and I was finally set free by some Christians from America who spoke the truth. You see, my friends, why they hate us, the Islamists and the Marxists? It is largely the capitalist, free market, Christians, and conservatives that are their enemy. Of course, the Jews. But they know that we will stand, many of us, with the Jews and the Jewish state. They know that we will put our money where our mouth is. We will start networks like this. We will sponsor and produce and distribute at our expense programs like we have on this network. We will put them out all over the world. They know that we are the ones that are unbrainwashing many people, and they see us as a threat. But we see from the caller yesterday from Mexico that one of the keys is education. Education and the truth destroyed the lies that had taken her captive, spiritual captive. And she called into the program to say, I can say yes and validate what you're saying. And I am the product of one that was brainwashed and then set free with the truth by proud Americans who are also Christians who came and spoke truth to me in Mexico. Folks, education is the key. Truth is the key to destroying these lies. That's what we brought you tonight. That's why we brought Dave to town, and he sat at this news desk for 4 hours doing 4 one-hour briefings. Now, these are very professionally done. You'll find them on our website at wvwtv.com with all the PowerPoint for you to share with your friends, your family, your local law enforcement, military friends. Get them out all over the world. If CARE is going to shut down sheriff departments and police departments, then we'll put it out this way. This is very important. Thank you, David, for your service to our country in the military, also as a sheriff deputy, and then as chief of police. And now what you're doing now.
You're quite welcome. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Folks, if you appreciate programs like this, remember we are listener supported. It doesn't happen without your support. We don't have money coming from some big, huge foundation, the Rockefellers, George Soros, and all these groups. We don't have some church backing us, a big church or anything. We have $20, $30, $40, $50 a month donations. Some of you are generous and send more, but generally it's the little donations. It adds up. We're listener supported. If you appreciate what we're doing, the stand we're taking, the information and the service that we're providing, WVWFoundation.com to make a tax-deductible contribution. WVWFoundation.com. You can also send a check to our mailing address. You'll find it there on the screen. You can also join our Situation Room, where we archive all of our years of programs. All of our shows are available, mostly all of them, are available for free for a period of time. Then they do roll into our VIP club. SituationRoom.net if you want to join. SituationRoom.net. Thank you so much for watching. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Take care. We'll